following podcast is hashtag Boone approved. It's time for another edition of the Brett Boone Podcast.
Remember when me and you almost went to blows? Lou sent me down three times too, so I know what you're talking about.
With your host, MLB All-Star, Brett Boone.
Bottom line is, you will become a successful major league hitter by hitting pitchers' mistakes.
As he sits down with his sports and entertainment friends from around the world.
You are not going to be a successful major league hitter if you hit pitchers' pitches.
This isn't just any former Jocks podcast.
To change the outcome, you got to change the income. You got to change what goes in. Then that changes what goes out.
Often duplicated, but never replicated. Just like his bat flip.
Okay, now the party starts. The responsibility starts now.
Now in its fourth year, this is the one and only Brett Boone Podcast.
Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. I'm Brett Boone. Today I'm joined by a 12-year MLB veteran. He won a Gold Glove in 2007. He's currently lead TV analyst for the Atlanta Braves. He's known as Frenchie. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Jeff Francoeur. Jeff, thanks for coming on the Brett Boone Podcast.
Well, thanks for having me, Booney. And I'm just glad you're okay after your home run derby experience at Alumni Weekend.
Oh, no. Stop it.
I wanted to make sure you didn't pull anything, pull an oblique. Oh,
it's unbelievable. And as we get, and you're not there yet, but you'll see. Oh, I can still do this. I can still. But when you get to like 55, your body acts like you think, yeah, I can handle this. I can pull it off. You get out there, it's just a different animal. You lose your legs is what you lose. You got no oomph left in that. There's no explosion.
Dude, I get it. I had an AB for the Savannah Bananas back in March when they came to Atlanta, and I put a ball in play, and I could not believe how slow I was getting from home around first base.
How about this? I played in this game. Okay, this is about a month ago. I played in this game. It was some Legends game. So I show up, and I think it's going to be one of those, you know, tipped your cap. Yep. How you doing? You know, guy lay it in there for me, put it in play, run it out, go into the dugout. So I get there, and Posednik is leading off for me. On the other team, I've got Ray Lankford, who's 3 years my senior. He's 58 years old. He can still hit. He's gained a few little weight, but he can hit. So anyway, you've got a bunch of X players, and then sprinkled in with some college all stars. So I get in the box, my first at bat, and I'm walking out there going, wait a minute, are these guys serious? Like, I'm not ready for 90. This guy's coming at me. He's trying to get me out. Frenchie, first pitch, he freaking spikes a changeup. And I'm going, what are we doing here? He's going slider. Yeah, slider. I go 1-1. He drops it in there for a strike. Anyway, all the thoughts are in your mind. Like, all right, it's 80, probably 88. 90 is probably being a little generous. Probably 88. But you're still thinking, wait a minute, I'm older. I got to get it going. I got to cheat a little bit. When really you don't. And I'm out in front of everybody. I hit into a double play. By the way, I did double off the bottom of the wall, left center, and it's everything I had. Go ahead.
Those are so good. You know, I remember Ron Washington.
Yes.
When he was my manager in 2010, we went to the World Series. He played an old timers game in Minnesota in August. And dude, he was taking this serious. Clint Hurdle was throwing him BP every single day. Like, he was getting ready. So we get to the game, right, and all the Rangers, we come out to watch him. And, dude, I could not believe he got up to the plate. He freaking was trying to hit seeds. Everybody else, Kent Herbeck, they're laughing, joking. Well, Wash blew out running to second. He blew his hammy out. And so they had to, like, limp him off the field. Dude, the rest of the season, when he would go make a pitch and change, man, he was limping to the mound. But, like, he still talks to this day, if I ever see him, he goes, yeah, but I was 3-for-3, mother. You know what he was saying.
Yeah, yeah.
It was unbelievable.
Some guys are like that, too. They're ultra competitive. And even though they get older, they're thinking, oh, no, I can still do this. I can still do this. But it's, man, it's hard. And Rhino is the guy, because I kept, you know, I said, Rhino, you got to carry us. Because Rhino's still younger than me. I said, Rhino, you got to carry us. He's like, yeah, Booney, I'll be fine. And then Rhino didn't hit that many, and he's still apologizing a month later. And I make him feel like, hey, Rhino, you really let me down, man. I expected a lot more out of you. He's like,
The problem is you can relax and enjoy it. Rhino's going to carry with that for a while. Like, you know,
he's really worried about
it. That's what I'm saying. He's going to wear that for a while.
He really is. It is funny. All right, I got a couple different things I want to talk to you about. A year ago, Braves won 104 games, best offense in the National League. But before the games even started, we lose Acuna for the year, MVP a year ago. You lose a Spencer Strider, who's your number one to start to pretty much at the beginning of the season. Matt Olson, who I love. I had Matty in the minor leagues. He's got 25 homers. A year ago, he had 54. Now, you can't expect somebody to hit 54 home runs, but that's just the way the Braves offseason has gone. Albies has been in and out of the lineup. He's on the IL currently as we speak. Riley's out of the lineup with a broken bone. Azuna's been the guy carrying that offense, having an MVP caliber year if it weren't for Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah.
The one thing they can really do, Jeff, and you watch it on a daily basis, is they can really pitch. Top staff in the National League this year. Bullpen's really solid. With all this adversity, and since Snitger took over, and I believe he took over second half of 2016, that Braves organization's been a juggernaut, kind of like it was in the 90s where, hey, you win every year. Yeah. And you got a great guy at the top, and then you got a great staff, as you know, with Walt E. Weiss on the staff, a bunch of guys. Walt, still to this day, one of my favorite guys.
Don't mess with Walt Weiss. I'll tell you.
Don't mess with him. He's an MMA guy. You played for Bobby back in the day, your major league debut, Bobby Cox, 05 yeah. through 09. And you played, I don't know if you played for Snit in 16 or not.
I did.
Okay. So you've played for both of them. You know what it's like. All the adversity that the Braves have had, and it's pretty cool when you can call this adversity when you're still right there in the hunt to go in the playoffs on your worst year. How has Snit handled all this? And well, I talk about Brian Snicker.
Yeah. Well, I think the great thing for him is he was in the minor leagues for what, freaking 41 years, 42 years? Like, this guy gets how hard the game is from so many different angles, right? From just grinding day after day to get to the big leagues. You know, a lot of people don't know this, Booney, about Snit, but he was a third base coach when Freddie Gonzalez took the job in Miami. So here he is for 8 years as a third base coach under Bobby. And then in 2013, he gets fired. He basically was the scapegoat for what they were. I guess you could say they got knocked out of the playoffs and they fired the third base coach. Like, it's his fault.
Right. But shouldn't have sent him.
Exactly. And so all of a sudden, though, instead of griping all this, he goes back to AAA for the Braves. And he manages for three more years. Doesn't say anything. And finally gets his opportunity. Then in 17, he was one day away from getting fired. A lot of people don't realize that. And then all that stuff happened with John Hart, John Coppola, with the international scouting stuff for the Braves. And so all of a sudden, Alex Anthopoulos comes on, and he's like, you know what? I'm not going to ruffle feathers. I will keep this guy in there for one more year. Alex has told me himself, like, I had planned on keeping Snit for a year and bringing my own guy in. And then in 18, the Braves make that improbable run to win the division, and it kind of just started what they have now. But I think the great thing for Snit is he's a player's manager. He gets how hard the game is, you know. And I'll say this. I know you know your brother better than anybody. But, you know, I do the Tuesday night TBS games. You know, that's why I'm in L.A. here. I got the Dodgers-Cubs tonight. But I walk in there with your brother. He's the same guy mostly day in and day out. You know, I know he's behind the scenes. I'm sure he talks to you. He's frustrated. He does this. But to the players, to the media. And that means a lot to a team. When all of a sudden you know that, hey, this guy, whether we've won five in a row or we've lost five in a row, and you know playing for Bobby, man, the time you were in Atlanta, that's how he was. He was not going to show you that he's panicked. He's not going to show you that it's any different. And so I think that's one of the reasons the Braves have stuck around, because these guys know, look, at the end of the day, Snit is who he is. He's not going to run from adversity. He understands when guys go down, it's next man up. Is it inconvenience? Yeah. Do you wish you had Ronald Acuna, Spencer Strider? Yeah, but you got to play with who you have. And so I think that's why all those things make Snit such a great manager and a guy that's the perfect guy for the perfect job.
I think you're right. And you know, I've had Snit on the podcast before, and I don't know him well, But just that hour I sat down with him, he's got a way about him. He's there's certain guys you play for that have that it factor. Snit has that it factor. He's had so much experience. He's had so much humble pie, like you mentioned at the top, in this game. It wasn't just handed to Snit, and he had this unbelievable run. You talk about grinding and putting your time in. He definitely did that. And I just got a sense that, man, this is a guy that if I can rewind the tape, I'd want to play for a guy like him. So
you love the honesty, right? Like, that's the thing. This is what I hate about our game today. Everything's like a hidden secret, right? Like, be transparent, be honest. Your brother last year, he had me rolling. Me and Brian Anderson walked into his office because we did a Tuesday night game with the Braves and Yankees. And, you know, the Braves were setting all sorts of records. The Yankees last year, they didn't know who was going to be in the lineup day to day. And I remember your brother sits there and he puts the Braves lineup and the Yankees lineup next to each other. He goes, what the hell am I supposed to, what do you want me to do? You know?
And you're right.
Like, you look at these lineups and you're like, what do you want me to do? One team's superior to the other at this time. And I think that's the great thing about Snit is you go talk to him, Booney, and it's like, hell, we're just trying to score a run today. If we can get one run, maybe we can win a ball game. And to me, that's refreshing, man.
Yeah, he's got that way about him. I mean, and you know, I think something they have on their side too is that culture in Atlanta. They definitely had it, obviously, in the 90s. I got to play at the very end of the 90s just for 1 year in Atlanta. But I got to see that culture, and it was – they don't take it for granted. But they expect it when you walk in that locker room. Here's what we do. We win every year. I remember, and I've told this story before, I was a new player in 99. Myself and Brian Jordan came over and via trade. And I remember Bobby having his how they gather everybody around first day of spring training. He was addressing the new guys. And he said, Booney, Brian, this is especially for you. We here in Atlanta, what we do is, I'm going to put the lineup up every day and we're going to go out and we're going to steamroll our opponents. That's what we do in Atlanta. And everybody was kind of looking around like, yeah, that's what we do. I remember later in the year going to a shares meeting, as you have, for who's going to get how much money for the playoffs. Tommy Glavin was kind of, you know, he was kind of he ran the meeting and we're giving out shares and it's like, well, how many are we going to give the grounds crew? And I'm going, wait a minute, man, we give a lot of shares out here. And I raised my hand. I said, Glav, are we gonna give the concession people a share? And he looked at me with a smile and he goes, Booty, it was right along the lines of what Bobby said. We here in Atlanta, we win every year. So we like to take care of the guys. And everybody kind of laughed and I put my hand down. I said, okay. You know, I was coming over from Cincinnati. I'd been to a couple postseasons, but definitely it wasn't one of those things where it was year in and year out that, hey, we're just winning. That's what this Braves, I look at this run they're on. It's just first place. This is the first year in a while where you kind of been on the outside looking in. And I think for Atlanta, it's a great thing that on your worst year, and today's the day, this podcast will be coming out tomorrow, Wednesday, the 11th. It's now the 9th. For the first time all season, the Atlanta Braves are really on the outside looking in. They're one game out of that wild card with these crazy Mets and the season they've had coming back. I'm going to leave it up to you. First, you want to talk about the Phillies or you want to talk about the Mets? Because I want your perspective on that division.
Well, let's go Phillies first because
I
think they've been the most dominant team all year from top to bottom. And I mean from starting rotation to the lineup, of course, the juggernaut they have, and the bullpen. Now, one thing I would tell you, this second half, I think we've seen the back end of the rotation, whether it's getting tired or showing some wear and tear. And a few of their bullpen pieces, I think, you know, they're a little more beatable at times, but I think, you know, as well as I do, man, I did that NLDS and NLCS up there. That is a true home field advantage in Philadelphia. I mean, that place in October it's an SEC football game. It's insane.
You know, I watched that a year ago and you probably remember this. Remember when Arizona went there and they got beat, they were down two. And I said, in that atmosphere in Philly, you're right. Above and beyond the rest of the rest of the postseason venues a year ago, Philly was like it was a different animal, and you almost had the sense that when Arizona was in Philly, no chance on earth. What are the Vegas line? What was the Vegas line? 100% no chance of winning. And the fact that that Diamondback team won that series, that's one of the most impressive things I've seen in the modern game.
I remember me and Ron Darling sat in Torrey Lovello's office in game six in Philly. And he even looked at us and said, man, I don't know how we're going to pull this off two games in a row. But I think the thing they did was when they won game six, game seven, there were a lot of nervous people walking into that stadium. Now, don't get me wrong. The atmosphere was incredible. The fans were going crazy. But we kept saying the longer they stay in this, I'm telling you what, man, the more nervous this stadium is going to get. And when they won in game seven, me and Ron Darling at the same time, we literally, because him being a Mets guy, you know, we both know what Philly's all about. We stepped back about 6 feet in our chairs. And I remember Brian Anderson looking at both of us like, to the right, what are they doing? I said, I don't want a beer bottle coming right through my forehead right here, because I thought those fans were going to burn the city down after they lost that one.
It was unbelievable. You're going to get to see that electric atmosphere this postseason, because Philly, you know, it's been, like you said, they've kind of been the class of baseball all year, with the exception of the second half in their bullpen. They've had some injuries here and there, but Schwarber's gotten hot. You got a Trey Turner and a Bryce Harper. Castellanos is hitting some home runs again. Their young third baseman Bohm has kind of had a breakout year. I believe he's on the IL right now. And then you look to that rotation: Nola, Wheeler, Suarez, and Sanchez, who are kind of two unsung guys. You always hear about Nola and Wheeler, and Wheeler's the annual Cy Young candidate, but Suarez and Sanchez are good. I think Suarez a year ago really kind of, in the postseason, kind of made a name for himself, but he's continued to do it. And that starting rotation, top to bottom, is as tough as anybody. For me, though, I still give the slight advantage to the Atlanta Braves. And if it weren't for Chris Sale, Wheeler's probably the Cy Young winner this year. Yeah. But Sale's done what he's done.
And I think that's the thing for Atlanta, right? To finish on that, if they can just sneak into the postseason, no one wants to see that rotation. There's not a team out there that wants to face that team, especially in a three-game series. You throw Sale, Lopez, and Freed. You got Schwellenbach, Iglesias. Like, you can do some serious damage. And that's the crazy thing, right? We're talking about the Phillies, and you mentioned all those players. We haven't even mentioned JT Realmuto, right? He gets lost in the shuffle because he's been injured. He's had a little bit of a down year, but I think we both know that guy in the postseason will show up. You know that. He'll be ready to go and put some good ABs.
I agree, and I think he makes a big difference behind the dish with that rotation. Yep. And the, you know, the more I get away from the game, Jeff, the more I appreciate that catching position and how much they mean to not only a rotation but a team. When your guys that are going every fifth day, they come into the ballpark and they have a positive sense of who they're throwing to, that relationship between pitcher catcher, it's more important, I think, more important than people give it credit for a success. Because who's the most important guy in the ballpark every night? Whoever's on the mound, you're starting pitching. Yep. And as long as he's happy and he loves his battery mate, that being Realmuto, one of the best in the game, I think he adds beyond the stats. I think he adds a huge, he's a huge part of that team as a whole.
You know what's funny is I think in today's game, look at your Gerrit Coles, your Zach Wheelers, your Chris Hill, look at your aces. But now, Booney, show me which one of those guys doesn't call their own game. We all see how they have the little thing. Watch Zach Wheeler. He could easily just say, hey, I'm calling my game. I'm doing this. He trusts JT Realmuto so much, he doesn't press a single button. He's just sitting there listening to what JT tells him, and he throws it. And I think that's a perfect example of a guy that has the full respect, because if he was just an offensive catcher or someone that, you know, didn't care, you would have – Zach Wheeler, you'd have Aaron Nola out there pressing their buttons, calling their pitches all the time. But they trust JT so much, they don't have to do it. And I've talked to Zach Wheeler about that. He said, dude, it's a breath of fresh air for me, because I don't have to worry about pressing a button. I literally sit there, JT tells me what to throw, and I trust it.
It is unbelievable. And I tried to liken it, and I don't think it's a fair analogy, but to the middle infield, because I played with some great shortstops, and I played with some years with some challenges. And the difference of having the full trust and confidence in my middle infield partner, it enables me to make that unbelievable play, to take a risk, take a chance. Because if I come up firing and I'm not picture perfect with my feed, the great shortstops I played with, they would make it look like a great feed. So I didn't have to worry. I could just play my game. And now other times I'm thinking, well, they come across the bag too fast. If it's a foot off, it'll go into left field. It really disrupts your game from the defensive side. I don't know if it's a fair analogy to pitcher catcher, but that's the closest thing. And the only thing in my experience I could relate it to, because having that partner in the middle that you trust, it just takes a facet of the game and it throws it away. Defense becomes simple because it's like, I got my guy over there. He knows he's got me. And it makes defense so easy. One less thing you got to worry about. And having a great catcher, I think, to your point, really, really makes it an easier transition and one less problem to worry about.
I think that's the great thing in baseball, right? And I remember you coming on the air with us and talking about Barry Larkin. And I love it because it's like you trusted him. You knew exactly where he was going to be all the time. You never had to worry about it. It was one less thing for you to concentrate on what was going on. And like you said, it gave you a chance to go out there and make the tough play. Maybe do something you usually wouldn't do with another guy and ends up being one of the greatest double plays ever turned. And so I think it's the same thing with that. Like if you're pitching and all of a sudden I don't have to think about what I'm throwing, I just throw it. Holy smokes, man. It should free you up to go out there and just be a stud.
Let's turn to the Mets. Tell me what you see with this Mets. I don't know what to make of this Mets team. I saw them early. I don't think there was any, I mean, there's always high expectations in New York, but I think from the baseball world, the analysts, I don't think anybody was thinking 2 months ago that the Mets were going to be a factor. All of a sudden they found their way back into the playoff mix. As of today, they're the third team in the wild card. If the season was over today, the Mets are in.
Yep.
What do you see? You got Lindor's had a big comeback year. People are talking about MVP. Once again, I think in the National League, I don't think that's going to happen, but he has had a great year. Alonso, with all the back and forth with Alonso, he's still sitting there. He's got 30 plus homers again, even on a down year. He's a guy that you can count on for that. Look at that rotation. Peterson's been a big boon to that rotation. Severino's really, with all his years in New York and the injuries and in and out, on that IL, he had Tommy John surgery. He's really been an anchor at the top of that rotation. Give me your thoughts, Mets overall.
Let me tell you this. When David Stearns got hired there, I remember thinking if Stevie Cohen will get out of the way and let him run this team, let him build this team. Booney, you know as well as I do in New York, don't care what the media says. Do not pay attention, Stevie Cohen, if they're trying to say you got to sign this guy, you need to get this guy. So I think that's number one. They put Carlos Mendoza in there, who learned, obviously, was one of your brother's right-hand man for a long time, and who's, I think, ready for this job. He knows what New York is. He knows what's expected. And so he's been kind of even-keeled the whole time. But the number one thing I think they've done is they've given these guys a chance to play. And by that, I mean Mark Bientos has finally been able to show what he can do. Last year, man, you know as well as I do in this game, if you're young, that's why I got lucky when I was young. I came up for Bobby Cox. If I went 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts, I was in the lineup the next day. I didn't have to worry looking over my shoulder wondering, shoot, am I going to play today? Am I going to be on the bench? Bientos the last 2 years has gone up and down, up and down. There's been no chance for him to build confidence. And all of a sudden now, you have Lindor batting leadoff. You got Nimmo batting second. You got Vientos. JD Martinez, when he's been able to be healthy and be in there. You have Alonso. You have this flow of a lineup now. One thing I get so mad at in baseball now is the matchups and what they do. I know there's platoons in baseball. It's natural with certain positions. But when I see a lineup and I see a guy hitting third one day, and I see him hitting eighth the next day because of a righty-lefty, that's a warning sign to me. You believe this guy can hit third one day, but then you think he's the eighth hitter the next day? Like, that to me, that can't happen. And I think if you've looked what they've done now is they're putting Lindor, their face of the franchise, out there to hit leadoff. Look at what the Dodgers are doing with Ohtani now. Ronald Acuna in Atlanta. Like, I remember Brian McCann in 19 when he came back to the Braves. We had this talk because we were talking about I thought, I was like, hey, Acuna, why would you not move him to third or fourth, give him a chance to drive in more runs? And Brian was like, right away, no way. That other manager and that pitcher, they know when they throw the first pitch of the game, dude, they're in for a long ride because of who's batting first. And so I look at that, and I'm like, they put Lindor leadoff. His energy now has been incredible. And this Mets team, dude, they're fun to watch. They're believing. And I think for the first time in a long time, I played there in 2009, 2010. All they cared about was what the Yankees were doing, what the newspaper said. And for the first time, I think this team actually could care less what the media thinks. And I think the manager, the way David Stearns, the way Stevie Cohen's going, they're letting them just play baseball. And that, I'll tell you what, man, this Mets team is fun to watch right now. Like, they get in the playoffs, they could make some noise.
Their new skipper, Mendoza. And he was on Aaron's staff. I didn't know him from Adam. Aaron said, hey, Brett, Mendoza, he's going to be really good. He's a really good signing, you know, for the Mets. And I was in Cincinnati early in the season and doing an event there. And I was there to throw out the first pitch. And I was on the field before the game. And Mendoza came over to me, probably because Aaron and his relationship.
Yep.
And I felt like I knew him my whole life. Booty, what's going on? And I'm going, okay, this is Mendoza. I don't know if I've met him before, but I talked to him, and I had about a 10-minute conversation with him. I was really impressed. Once again, not to overuse the phrase, but he had a way about him. And I think having a way about you when you're the skipper, man, it's not a thing that everybody has. And I think when you got it, you run with it, and you've probably got a good thing. So I agree with you on the Mendoza. I think he's been a real plus for that organization. Let's get to your Braves. You know, I mentioned the top, the things I saw, the things I highlighted. What is the key for this Braves team down the stretch? I think we got, 16, 17 games to go. One game out. As of today, what do they need to do down the stretch to secure that playoff spot that they're so used to having?
Score a damn run. I mean, score one run, for God's sakes. You know, we sit here as we're doing this. They lost 1-0 to the Reds last night in a makeup game. And it's like, you were getting dominant starting pitching from all five guys. Sale, Lopez, Fried, Schwellenbach, Morton. Even Charlie at age 40 is still giving you six innings and one or two runs. But Booney, this is where we talk about, you got to find a different way to score, man. Like, this team is usually hitting long balls. And next year, with Acuna back, with Riley back, with Albies back, they're going to do it again, right? Like, this team's going to be really good again next year. And you add Strider back into the rotation. But with 18 games left, you got to score however you got to score. And I called Sunday's game against the Blue Jays, and Eli White for the Braves dropped a bunt with a guy on first. The defense for the Blue Jays didn't know what to do. I mean, because no one bunts anymore, right? Like, no one knows how to defend it. He threw it away, and next thing you know, they had second and third, and they won an extra inning. My point to that is, right now, you got to find a way. Let's score 3-4 runs, however we got to do it. If it's a bunt to start an inning when the guy's playing back, and you get them over, you do it. But this team, look, if Ozuna or Olsen's not hitting a long ball right now, they're not going to put up crooked numbers, right? So find a way to score a few runs, because with that starting staff, that's all you need. But you know this, man, it's demoralizing to these pitchers if they continue to go out there and they're losing 1-0, 2-1. It is so tough to continue to win like that. And so my big thing is, like, you got to find a way to score a few runs and manufacture. But the problem is, this team's never really had to do that. They've always just outslugged people. And right now it's kind of showing they don't know how to score like that. And it's been a big problem.
Yeah, they almost mirror, if we go over to the American League, they mirror the Seattle Mariners. Yep. I mean, top to bottom staff, nobody wants to face it. But they lose 2-1. You know, I watched Gilbert the other day go 8. And all of a sudden I look up at the end and it's 2-0 final. And I'm going, you know, and you're right, as a player, as a position player, I don't know how often you've gone, but I've had a couple years where it seems you don't score for that one starter. And after a while it snowballs and you start to feel bad. Now all of a sudden he's pitching tonight. And as position players, we're like, hey, we got to score some runs for this guy tonight. Well, you just put that on top of this game that's already hard. And it seems like, once again, you're looking up in the sixth inning and it's 2-1 and you haven't done it again. So putting that, you want to score so bad for him, it's almost like you gotta try less, because the more you try, the worse it gets.
In 2012, I was in Kansas City, and we got James Shields from Tampa, the big Will Myers trade that offseason. And it was that, Booney. James Shields lost like five games to start the year, like 1-0, 2-1. And he was going 7-8 innings. And we were just, as an offense, dude, we got to score. And we put so much pressure on ourselves. And like you said, the game's already tough enough. Then you're trying to do this. So, look, man, you're either going to be able to get in by scoring a few runs here or there, or you're going to be on the outside looking in. And you look at it, like you said, with Seattle. They were able to get past it for a while, but now it just catches up. If you can't score at all, eventually this league's going to catch up, and that's what it's done. What, Houston's up five games on them now. And back in June, I kept sitting here going, man, let me tell you, you do not want to face Seattle during the playoffs. Like you talked about going through that rotation, and now, barring a miracle, I mean, they're not even going to make the playoffs. So that's the same kind of thing. You might have the two best pitching staffs in baseball, the Braves and the Mariners, not in the playoffs. And all these other teams are going to say, thank God.
Is that unbelievable, too? Because as a player, yeah, as a position player, you just think, you give me a staff that's number one in the league, I'll put a triple-A offense out there, and we will get to the postseason, especially in this new format where 12 guys get a seat at the table. You're going to find it, and you're right. That's interesting right there. There is a chance that the Atlanta Braves, with the number one rotation and pitching staff in the National League, doesn't make it, and there's a scenario where the number one staff in the American League doesn't make it. At probably the easiest time in the history of the game, it is to get to the postseason with six spots.
And when we talk about this, right, like, so, okay, let me ask you this, because this is, I'm big on this right now, these hitters meetings that everybody has, right? This all talk, let's have hitters meetings. I'm not a big guy for a full – I talked to Sean Casey about this, you know, who was last year in New York with your brother, and it's like each hitter is different, right? Like if you're going up there, you're telling me that Justin Verlander is approaching Gleyber Torres the same way he's going to approach Aaron Judge? Not a chance in hell. So why are we having this talk about how they're pitching it? Like I thought the other day with the Atlanta Braves, they had this big hitters meeting – and Kevin Gausman was on the mound for the Blue Jays. And I remember thinking, he's not throwing to Marcell Ozuna the same way he's throwing to Orlando Arcia. I always feel like hitters meeting should be, you know, hey, why don't, if I'm the hitting coach, Booney, I'm going to come up to you real quick and say, hey, look, you might be susceptible to sliders away. So with your Gausman, look early to get a fastball, because when he gets ahead of you, he's going to start bouncing at her. He's going to go to that split. We watch pitchers, right? Pitchers and catchers get a meeting. They go over each hitter. Not as a whole, they go over each hitter, how we're going to attack. So I've always said it from a hitter standpoint, why do we not have individualized hitters meetings with certain hitters to say what they're going to do? Because they're not approaching an offense as the same. And also, you know this too, Booney, when you were hot, you didn't care who was pitching. Even though he might have owned you the year before, if I'm hot right now, throw me something in here, I'm going to hit it. Just like we know, just because you owned a pitcher, when you're struggling, you're not as confident going into that at bat. So I just think so many of these times, there's so many meetings. And I go back to what George Brett taught me so many times when I was in Kansas City. He's like, Frenchie, this is an easy game. And we make it so much harder than it needs to be. Between meetings, between numbers, it's see the ball, hit the ball.
And when it comes to those meetings too, it's so individualized, like you were saying. The best meeting, the best thing you can do for yourself as a hitter is gather all the tape you can gather. Let's go over this guy's last outing. Let's see how he pitched. And like you said, in my day, it wasn't, I don't care how you pitch to Ichiro, the first batter of the game. I want to know how you're going to pitch to me with a base open in the eighth.
Yeah.
That's what I want to do. So I think the players, the onus is kind of on them to go, all right, who am I? Who am I on that other team? Let me see this last game he faced, and let me pick out a guy that I can relate to that he'd probably pitch me similar, and do the research that way. Not 84% of the time in this particular situation he threw. That's the biggest nonsense I've ever heard. It's like, okay,
84% of the time in a 1-2 count, he goes to the off speed. I said, okay, what about the last time I was in a 1-2 count and he hung me a slider and I hit it off the facade? Does that mean he's going back to that? Or is it safe to say I could throw those numbers out the window? You're right. It's a very individualized thing. And why, with all these strides we're supposedly making, why are we still having that kind of archaic, okay, let's have a big group and here's what we do. Okay, he throws this. It's an individual thing.
Because you know as well as I do, it's covering your ass. That's all it is. You know, yeah. If I have this meeting, I said, it's like I showed up Friday and the Braves were early hitting and Snit's like, who gives a rat's? Please hit at 7:10, not at 5 o'clock. You know, and I'm not saying don't do early hitting and don't do this, but I agree. When these players got to go, hey, I remember with Chipper, man, he used to tell me all the time, go pick out a guy that they just played that's very similar to you, that right. has kind of your stuff, and go look how he attacked him, because that's what he's going to do to you. He's not pitching you the way, and I remember talking to Derek Lowe about this. He's like, Frenchie, I never wanted to throw sinkers down and into you because you had that golf swing where you could get it and pull it. He's like, I knew I wanted to come up in the zone to you and try to lock you up. He's like, we're with Andrew Jones. I wanted to get that sinker down because he would roll over. Because if I lived up here with Andrew, and you remember with Andrew, you're gone. You're not getting that ball back. So my thing is, let's get back to approaching it that way, and not as a team. It's a lost thing. It should not happen.
Individualized. All right, Braves. I looked at their schedule down the stretch. They got 4 with the Dodgers, 3 with the Mets, 3 with the Royals, who are surprisingly yep. hot and in the playoff picture. And then the Mets, they have 7 with the Phillies. That's going to be a challenge for them. 3 with Atlanta and 3 with Milwaukee. So I'd say overall, Braves have a little bit easier of a stretch, but both of them are definitely present their challenges.
I think it all happens, right? Like those last 3 games against the Royals, Booney. If the Royals have that 5th or 6th place locked up, you know, then maybe they're not going to do it as much. But you can't rely on that. If you're the Braves, you got to tell yourself, this team's going to play it out to the end. The scary teams to me are like the Braves go to Florida for 3 games. They could care less, right? Like they're letting it all hang out. It doesn't matter. And those are the scary teams sometimes. So, again, it's going to come down to the Braves. If they can average 3.5 to 4 runs a game, the next 18 games, they're in the playoffs with that staff. If they can't, you know what? They're going to spend October watching the Mets and the Diamondbacks and the Phillies and everybody else play.
Okay, a few things off topic, then I'll let you go. He continues to impress me. I never thought we'd get to a point in the game where this was happening, but it is. I've kind of gotten over my awe of a couple of years ago with Ohtani doing what he's doing. But 46-46 as of today. He never kind of ceases to amaze. Ozuna, you know, early, and Ozuna in his own right having an unbelievable season. Yeah. I think 37 home runs, right at 100 ribbies, hitting 300 plus. And they were telling Ozuna the whole time, yeah, it's a great year, but you can't win it because you're a DH. Now all of a sudden, Ohtani's going 46-46, and they're talking about MVP, watching this guy getting to see him live. Are you as impressed as I am? And is he just as good as I don't know. Do you have any thoughts other than, believe that he was doing what he's doing?
No. And there's not a comparable. I mean, so let's just throw that out there. Like people that try to compare, this guy is big. He's fast. He's strong. And Booney, he's going to win the MVP and he hasn't even pitched. So there's an opportunity that we might see him roll off 5 or 6 straight National League MVPs, honestly, because if he's doing this just on an offensive year and going to win, what about when all of a sudden he's pitching next year and he wins 15 games with a 2-6? I mean, he's going to have this thing locked up. And I tell people this, just enjoy it, man, because we're watching something special. I mean, we really are.
It's unbelievable. And I thought, you know, they should give Judge the MVP. I said, if you're pitching, and at worst, he's a number 2. At worst.
Yeah.
Doing the things on offense that he's doing, nobody else is even in the conversation. You're the automatic MVP because you're pitching and hitting at an all-star level. Like you said, there's not a comparable. Nobody else can compare to that. Okay. Real quick on the new rule with the 2 disengagement. We're seeing stolen bases up. I'll tell you what.
what they did with that rule. I see what they did now. They want to encourage people to steal bases again. And they've reached that goal. People are starting to steal bases. It's becoming a part of the game. I think it's great for the game. But the two disengagement rule, I think eventually when everybody starts stealing bases, you're going to have to kind of tweak that. I don't know what the answer is. But take me back to being a first baseman. You were a gold glove caliber first baseman. You won one in 07. How would you handle it at first base right now when you know the two disengagement rules? Would that be different for you knowing they can't come over a third time? Or if they do, they've got to pick them off. Any challenges to being a first baseman now because it is so much easier to steal bases?
You know, it's funny. I've talked with Freddie Freeman a lot on this because, you know, I feel like he's got a great grasp on what it is. And I think one of the main things there is exactly what you said. This rule did what they wanted it to do, Booney. They got more stolen bases. They got action back in the game. But I do think they're going to have to tweak some of this. But I think you can tweak it some. But I still am waiting. I have not seen it yet. I want to see the dude that goes back for a third time and tries to pick him off. I'm still waiting for that.
Exactly.
I want
that's to, right.
I'm dying for someone to try it. And whether it works or not, I think it's awesome because if the guy dives back in and he's safe, he just gets to walk to second base. Like, I'm ready to see this. But there are times that I sit there and I'm like, if this guy has any good move right here, this guy's picked off. He is so far off the bag.
Wouldn't you, though, as a base runner right now, get a one-way lead? With
gone.
After the second? No, but get a one-way lead or go the other way just to get back to draw the throw to get the automatic bag right there. I don't
Absolutely. But we don't see it. No one throws it over, but I don't know.
All right. You still doing the podcast, Pure Athlete?
I am, man. It's been great.
I want to hear about it. Tell everybody where they can listen to it. What's the premise?
Thanks, Booney. It's pureathleteinc.com. You can get it on Spotify, Apple, all that stuff. But it's all about youth sports, man. And you know as well as I do, and today in the travel world with every sport, club volleyball, all this stuff. Look, I'm all about competition. I'm all about making yourself better. But at the same time, let's be realistic and let's have some fun. Let the kids play. Let them enjoy what they're doing. Let them develop. I think that's one thing that gets lost in translation. I coach my daughter's 11U travel softball team. Look, we play to win. Absolutely. I get on the girls, but I'm continuing to develop them. They're still young. You know, Davey Pollock came on. He said the best thing ever. He said, until kids go through puberty, you don't know what you're working with. You don't know
who
can do what. And it's so true. So my big thing is like, let's keep developing. So it's really just, we talk to athletes, giving them a platform to talk about their experiences being young. You know, I talk it all the time, Booney, continue to play multiple sports, man. We talk about the injuries in these baseball players, these injuries in these football guys that are just doing it year round and year round. There's no break for their bodies to do anything else. So it's more or less just bringing awareness to that and letting these parents realize that, hey, look, every kid's not going to be Bryce Harper, right? Every kid's not going to be Caitlin Clark, not going to be, you know, the next, you know, it doesn't matter who it is, you know, next Tyreek Hill. I mean, just let them have fun and they will tell you. That's what my dad always said. At 16, Jeff, I knew you wanted to go all in. So we did it. But he's like, your brother, he didn't want to, you know, he just had fun playing golf and doing whatever. So we did it. So know your kid and have a realistic expectation.
You're right. You got to have that passion. And I love what you said about the puberty thing. I say it all the time. I said, little Johnny's 12. We have no clue what he's going to be. How many kids did you play with when they were 12 and they were the best? And all of a sudden they're 16.
And they can't even make a high school team.
Everybody else caught up. And quite the contrary, too. A guy that was just it was never on your radar. All of a sudden he's on that varsity team in high school and you're going, where did he come from? A late bloomer, like you said. The puberty thing, huge for me. I've been using that for years. Jeff Rancourt, I appreciate you taking the time, man. I know you're busy. I appreciate you coming on the Brett Boone podcast. For those of you watching the Brett Boone podcast, we now have our own YouTube channel. Check it out there. For those of you listening on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast, until next time, keep it here. Thanks, Brett G.